The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Beauvais. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show, and thank you for joining us for 25 years. That's right, you new listeners, the program's been aired here in Rhode Island for about that long now, vying for one of the longest tenures, let's put it that way, on the air. The numbers here are for a full hour every evening from 5 to 6, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. 25 years of doing this, I still turn my head to look at the numbers when I give them. That's funny. I don't dial them ever, you know, so it's only that little hour that I'm here, so I always double-check, make sure. Never drop your guard, right? Keep the pressure on to perform as best you can. Tonight we're going to talk about dividends. Usually Friday night is more of a market wrap night for me, but things are pretty benign, I think, this time of year. You've heard me say many times that the market seems to have a sweet spot. It ends around the end of March. And I don't expect stock prices to go up usually from now until October. They usually don't. Usually doesn't mean 51% of the time in history. It means like 80% of the time. It's very high ratio. Very few things in the financial world are that high. Keep in mind, if you take different time frames and remeasure the same thing, you can get different answers. This is a cumulative look at quarters, and you find that most of the gains historically in the calendar year are October, November, December, January, February, and March. And then it's fun time, it's taxes, it's vacation, you know. Back to school is this beginning of the serious time. This is the theory of why the market runs this way, and I think it's accurate. Back to school is big money. Holidays are big money, travel, gift buying. Before you know it, oh, it's a New Year's Eve. Time to celebrate and party and travel and go out for dinner and all that, which is all wonderful. So this is a lot of money's moving around, you know, during this period of time. Right through, a lot of people make IRA contributions right through February and March for the past year, you know, because they have till April 15th or when they file their return to do that. And so pension contributions are year-end. Profit-sharing contributions are all in December or probably hit the sheets, you know, in January. So it's a very busy time in the money world. It's probably my busiest time, too. We're most in demand from the general public, I would say, is that same time frame. It's our money mindset as a society. And I don't know about other nations, but here in America it seems to be the case now. And I believe it really was similar behavior long ago. I remember hearing quotes or reading quotes in my learning over the years in the business. Sell in May and go away. You know, the summer doldrums is another thing you've heard. That means the stock market doesn't do that much. That's usually October, November, December, January, February, March. That's usually where most of it happens. So if I'm going to add stocks to a portfolio, I love to do it in the fall. And if we're going to trim them, I love to do it in the spring. Because that seems to be where the math is a bit in your favor. Dividends, dividends, dividends. This dividend craze has, and I think it's a good thing. I have a case for dividends myself. A hankering, if you will, is a word, a hankering. What am I, Beverly Hillbillies? A hankering, but it's a good simple word. I figured everyone would understand what I meant. You know, I remember an old commercial on television about cheese, hanker for a hunk of cheese, so simple term, right? Dividends are proof of profitability. You know, if you buy a stock that doesn't have a dividend, it has to go up in value. If you buy a stock for the dividend and you like the dividend, that's the reason you bought it, all you have to do is sit there and receive it. It's not speculative, you follow me? So dividends are proof of profitability. S&P 500, U.S. Biggest companies, maybe in the 2% range historically. I don't know what it is at the moment. Haven't checked it. But long term, it's in that 1.8, 2.2 range. International large cap stocks, very similar. Preferred stocks right now, believe it or not, still over 5%, sometimes almost 6%. There are ETFs that invest in agriculture. Check out one. The symbol is VEGI, V-E-G-I. It invests in corporations that work in that area, agriculture, you know. Pays a nice little dividend, 3%. Utilities pay 4% dividends. High-yield bonds, 7%. Imagine that. If you're in the right mindset with an investment like that, and you're getting 7% when you know that's a really outrageous dividend today. If you were told that the share price of that fund, now it's a bond fund, but it's the highest level of risk in the bond market. That's why they're called high yield and high risk. So I like those, in small doses. It's like strong peppers in your chili. You want to have them in there. It adds flavor. It's good to have, but you don't want to have too much. So you want to monitor it. Proper proportion, I guess you'd say. It's like cooking. Good portfolio management is like good cooking. Maybe that's why I like both. I really love to cook. I really love my work. So maybe there's a parallel I just discovered accidentally. But dividends are gettable much more than you might think. I often meet in the office with people, and I see their eyeballs pop go like this when they tell them, "Well, we can put a portfolio together. They'll pay 4% in dividends right now." Well diversified. I brought one in with me today as an example. 3.78 dividend right now. It's about 9 or 10 different ETFs. These are mutual funds which own internally, hundreds of different investments. Most of us, anyway, don't want a 44-page report for our IRA that has $192,000 in it. We don't want to have to look at 379 different stocks that's in there. With individual stocks, in order to get great diversification, you have to have lots of them. And so it gets a bit cumbersome. I think it's still very popular in the trustee world and when larger dollars are being handled, usually, anyway. So these 9 or 10 ETFs cover the gambit of bond, stock, international, and U.S. Dividends in almost 4%. Long-term return, 5.5, maybe 6. In this portfolio of ETFs that pay this nice dividend, and they're stocks and bonds, so it's not just income, you have about 3,782 different bonds. If you read the prospectuses and looked at each line and read each bond, there are 3,782 different ones in your IRA that has $41,000 in it, if you're in this portfolio I'm talking about, which is just 9 ETFs. How about 1,817? Individual stocks held by five or six of these ETFs. Strange time we're in, folks. Stock dividends are higher than bond dividends, and except in the case of high yield, and that's always the highest yield, around. But keep in mind, beware, high yield funds that are very attractive, pay really nice dividends. They have a nickname. It's called a stock fund incognito. What that means is it's not going to behave like a bond when the stock market acts up. It's going to behave like the stock market. Now, that's normally what you don't want in a bond, because you want bonds to be different than everything else in the account, which is why I suggested, a 5 or 10% position in high-yield bonds if it's appealing to you at all. I wouldn't exceed that at my age. I think if you're younger, income isn't really the issue. Long-term growth stocks are probably the best approach for the younger folks out there that have 20 years or more to go. Depending where you are, you might be somewhere in the middle, and therefore a hybrid-type portfolio can be easily created today with the tools that are available. You can do it yourself, too. There are great companies out there like Vanguard and T. Rowe Price and BlackRock, and if someone is comfortable selecting funds themselves, they might listen to a few radio shows like ours, do some reading, have some background themselves, and put together a little portfolio on their own and monitor it. That happens too. And it's nice that can be done today at very, very, very little cost. I would say be careful. It's a lot trickier than you probably think. I don't want to see anyone get hurt. I have, unfortunately, been called in to put the fire out quite a few times in life, in my career. I've shared those stories with you. One I will never forget was a young father who had remortgaged a house and thought he could trade stocks and turn the money into millions. What happens is after the stock market has a three-year blast, you're going to see ads for that kind of stuff, and it's based upon the momentum of the market the last 2 or 3 years, and usually that doesn't last much longer than that, so it's very trappy and dangerous. I'm not saying the people that are advertising are intentionally misleading. It's just that once their record is good, and that usually means that I think that that's run its course. It can be dangerous to jump in on the tail end of anything. Trying to find something to buy low and sell high later is a really nice thing. Buying something low that pays a dividend, so I get paid income while I'm waiting for it to go up in price. I like that even better. Sometimes things pay a high dividend because there's something wrong with them. That really is not the case in the examples I gave you a few moments ago. And I'll continue to do that throughout the show tonight. I try to give you a wide variety and try to be very objective. You can take a look at some of these wonderful investments. They're called ETFs, exchange-traded funds, 3 to 4% dividends. You can get them. I have another portfolio that's even more conservative that has a dividend of about 5. So 3.5 for moderate, 5% for conservative. But with a 5% dividend right now, I wouldn't expect really much growth at all beyond that. That's why I like the 3.5% dividend, because I think we can match that up with a couple of points of growth. And in a very moderate, responsible manner, get a 5.5% to 6% return over time. That doubles money in 12 years. It's a real nice number. Most people I speak to who are my age, I'm 58 and up, tell me they'd be thrilled if they could make even 4 to 6% is a good return right now, because our traditional thoughts when we think of making money on our money is the bank, and what does that pay? Half of 1%, it's almost zero. You know, no knock on them. It's just part of the cycle that we're in, and our government lowered rates so low that that's where they are right now, so it's really not their fault, you know. Don't want to bash anybody. Unless you're doing anything that's underhanded when dealing with the consumer, then we're all for a proper bashing in that category. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. I'm Steve Bove, Wednesdays and Fridays, certified financial planner professional. Wednesday night, join me on Wednesdays. My son Nathan is our financial historian, and he's very good at it. He's doing a great job on the program, and I always share my love of Tuesday night. Don and his daughter, Donna Grace. That's my night off. I'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
That's still good. I got to tell you, after all these years, good job, Don. He picked all this stuff in the beginning, all that music. He's pretty hip, you know, for a financial guy. Anyway, tonight is dividend night, and I'm a dividend crazy guy. I like dividends. The older I get, I'm 58. Dividends are proof of profitability. I got a list of them in front of me here, from 2% to up until 7%. So you can put a bundle of these things together, get a dividend of 3, 4, 5. And so I think a little bit of growth out of that in the long run as well. Dividends are like rents on an apartment building. A growth stock is like buying raw land. And you hope that you can sell it sometime down the road for more than you paid for it. But along the way, it doesn't do anything for you. Raw land, you probably have a real estate bill to pay taxes. And it's not generating income. There's not a building on it. So raw land is highly speculative, because there's only one way you're going to win, is it has to go up in value. Where I really like buying investments that I think are out of favor a bit due to natural cycles, not due to, current finite problems in that area. That would be something like to stay away from. But things generally, the big macro indexes and things, have their own natural cyclical behaviors over time. They're not really driven by anything particular. That's what they do. It's like my chest goes up and down when I breathe. You see my chest go down. Oh, what's wrong? Your chest is dropping down. Well, that's what breathing is. It's in and out, in and out, in and out. Markets run that way, too. A little bit of opportunity in energy right now. You're going to find some nice dividends there, over 2% for the first time in a while. Great American companies like ExxonMobil, a global company now. Nice dividends, 3.5% on that one. That's a real beauty. Again, dividends are proof of profitability. This portfolio that I shared with you before the break, 1,817 different stocks, 3,782 different bonds. It's a moderate portfolio with a dividend of about 3 to 4% and a 2% growth goal in addition to that. The last time the stock market fell apart in 2008-2009, I have a tracking of this type of thing, it was down 34% on paper. So a third of it dropped. So if you had 300,000, now you got 200,000. So you have to ask yourself, all investments do this. To what degree can I handle it is the question. So this account would have a beta rating or a risk rating of about, maybe 40% less risk than the S&P 500. See, I like that because I got gray in my beard. I like that less risk pot. You know what? If you're really young, you don't want that. You want the risk. Give it to me, baby. Give me the risk. Really, I'm dead serious about that. if you've got 25 years to go, if you're 30 years old or so, and, you know, you want to be using all those aggressive options in your 401k plan. Don't care what they do the first year or two. One of the best ideas, I guess, I was given when I was early on in my training in this business by a very wise person who was training me. He said, well, you know, you talk to people about investments, get them ready because, you know, they fluctuate. You got to, they have to understand how they work or they'll panic, get all panicky and stuff, you know. And I said, okay. And I said, so I'll make sure that I tell them that don't always remember that investments go up and down. They don't just go up, they go up and down. And this very wise man said to me, no, don't tell them that. I got a better one. Tell them they go down and up. Because there's always a chance it'll go, the investment you chose will go down first. And if it's a long-term investment, that doesn't automatically mean it was a bad choice. It might mean you're a little early on something, you know, whatever else. So depending how much you speculate, if you're ever hearing me speak of any of these type of bit nerdy things, I'm always talking about indexes and big, big things because I'm a chicken. Chicken meaning I don't want to invest in anything, not my money, not my client's money, that I believe for any moment could goose egg. You know, if I put 5% of a portfolio there, no way that can go to zero. And it's not a guaranteed thing with these ETFs, but if you own, you know, 5,000 different investments all over the globe in all different categories, how do you lose all that money? Everything would have to become worthless all at the same time. So can you have paper losses? Yes. But paper losses are not losses. They're called fluctuations. They're not losses. I had it one time a guy argue with me and say, oh, no, don't give me that. That's losses. I said, go try to take a tax deduction for it. The IRS says, yeah, see what they say. He clammed right up. Because if it really was a loss, see, it's not a loss on paper unless you force it and sell it low. Now, if you're speculating on goofy stuff, then you may have to do that and panic and sell when it's low and take a moderate loss to prevent it from being a bigger loss. If you're buying IPOs and things like that of high-tech companies, they can go right out of business. So you could lose every dollar you put into that particular holding. So I don't go near anything like that. That's been my very conservative style for 40 years now, and I don't plan on changing it one bit. Most people today, I find, if they're older, like my age, you know, even 40s and up, we live in a different world today. It's very frightening. There's terrible things going on, these political conflicts and overseas things. And so people are, I think, becoming, at least I know I did in the last 10 years, I've become pretty conservative about things and really don't want to take outrageous amounts of risk. And you know what? You shouldn't be doing that anyway at age 58, but you definitely have to have some risk in your stew. And so if you don't have any, you need some chili in your chili, right? Can't be just meat and tomatoes. Otherwise, it's not chili. Now, what is too much chili in your chili is not good either, right? But you have to have, I think, some. Otherwise, it isn't really chili. And you can't have an investment portfolio, really, because investment implies it has some growth potential in general. You know, you can be picky about these words if you like. There's only two categories you can really invest for, growth or income. I like having both. I think they balance each other out nicely. And I like dividends of at least 3% right now. And the good news is dividends are only going to go up. As interest rates rise, dividends go up right along with them. Not exactly in sync. I said that a little bit incorrectly. They're on a trailing basis. As you hear interest rates are rising by the Fed, you will eventually see these ETFs that I tell you are paying 3. All of a sudden, it's bloop, 3.12, bloop, 3.21, you know, over a 2.5-year period, it might rise, 1% or 2%. If you're getting 3% dividend on something and it goes up by 1%, that's a big increase. A whole nother 1 on top of the 3 is a third. It's a 30% increase. So we will be seeing that happening. We have already suffered through the most difficult time in history ever to invest in bonds and get good conservative dividends. The bond market in total return had a great 10 years. The wind was behind it. I am very confident that the next 10 should be one of the worst 10 years ever in the bond market. And how you avoid that is don't own the long stuff. You can't have the 30-year bonds. The pension plans can because that money's in there for 50 years. But I think you and I, as retail investors, don't want to own those long-term bonds. So the two categories right now you might want to take a look at is short-duration bonds, many ETFs that do that, dividends about 3%, and floating-rate bonds I like a lot, too. And those dividends are in the same range, 3 to 4%. Two different animals. The short duration is very rigid in the share price, where rising interest rates will fuel the floating rate fund, and as the dividend rises on it, it makes the share price more valuable, because anything that pays 6%, if it's to be sold, is usually worth more than something that pays 5%. If you're going to buy it, right, because you're going to get more, you're going to get more cash flow from it. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. We're talking about dividends tonight, and good news or bad, it's going to continue when we return. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show, and we're talking about dividends tonight, mostly from ETFs. Occasionally, I like an individual stock like real estate. Because it's very diverse. There's some tangible property involved, you know. Individual stocks are the most risk we can take. They're a lot more risk than these ETFs that I like. So I would suggest most of you avoid the individual stocks if you have a itch to scratch. Buy the industry, not one company. You know, you see these TV commercials all the time, spiders, you know, tells you how efficiently you can invest. If you're doing it on your own, these are great tools to use. Lord Abbott Short Duration Income Fund, that's my fun spotlight for tonight. There are many other good ones, you know, in this category, because it's a very conservative category. You're trying to make 3 to 4% here. Since the fund was opened in 1993, it's averaged about 4% return. That's about, it's not going to ever really ruin your night, you know, and never excite, you're not going to be bragging about it to your buddies either, okay? But every portfolio at some age of the client, and I'm at that age, needs to be balanced, and it shouldn't be all stocks, in my opinion, unless you plan on working and adding to it for, say, 20 years or longer. The real hardcore definition of how long should you be investing for to have stocks, it's really 20 years. We in the modern world, with our impatience, have squeezed it into 10. I've heard it get down to 5. It's really supposed to be 20 if you really get really hard-nosed about it. But Lord Abbott, Short Duration Income Fund, 5-star rated by Morningstar, which is something to look at. It's not the all-solve-all measuring stick, but it's an interesting one. Very diversified, very conservative. This kind of a fund can have a flat year where you get the dividend, but the share price went down 3% temporarily. So on paper, you have no gain. Almost always what will happen is the next year you'll get the principal back, plus a little pop on the other side. You're talking about fluctuations in the 5 to 10% range. All investments fluctuate. If they don't fluctuate, it's a CD in a bank. And if it's a CD in a bank, it's not going to pay anything like what I'm talking about. So you have to let the investment breathe. You have to let them fluctuate, or they can't be what they are, you know. And finally, I always want to make sure we throw this one in. We don't want to see anyone get hurt. I tell this story over and over again, and it makes me sad. I want to cry. I've met more times than I want to mention in my office, people who've come in to become clients and told me that they lost half their money twice. In my age, and now they're here sitting in front of me at 56 years old, and they've lost $300,000-$400,000 because they sold it all out when it was low at the bottom. You know what I say to them? Let me handle the money. That'll never happen again. Because if you call me up and tell me to do that, I'm gonna, in a very polite, professional, and respectful manner, and hopefully maybe use a little touch of humor, try to convince you that that's not the right thing to do. If you have a greatly diversified account and the whole world's going crazy, you really are best off sitting tight. Seldom is selling it once there's been a reaction. Prices have already dropped, and you're going to get clobbered. Most people that have been very successful at long-term investing, I'm one of those people, have this crazy habit of sticking to stuff. I'm a disciplined guy. You know, I lift a 20-pound dumbbell every morning. I've been doing it for 40 years. I do the same thing. I eat the same breakfast, like the same lunch. That's me, you know. But in the investment world, this type of discipline is essential, not just required. It's essential. And the people who are the most disciplined in the investment world, I don't mean people who sell product. I mean people who actually manage accounts. Those people are usually turn out in the long run to be the ones, because if you if your overall strategy prevents you from creating losses, that's a good strategy, right? You just have to be able to believe in it. The last 12 times the U.S. stock market fell down, every time you heard at the bottom of the market somebody saying in the major TV and news that it's different this time, it won't come back. It's different this time. Do you hear that? It's different this time. Well, the last 12 market corrections, it happens every 7 years. So we're talking about 80 or 90 years. Guess what? Every time it came back. So the next time you, if you're one of those people spewing that stuff when the market is in correction mode, please stop doing that. Some sneaky salespeople will market that way at a time like that, wanting you to sell you a particular product. But selling out of any diversified investment that has a good long-term record when it's out of favor seems foolish. I don't care if it's gold, bonds, or anything else. Speaking of dividends, no dividend on gold. I wouldn't have gold if you, especially if you're really young. There are times to have it. It had a burst run there a while back, but generally speaking, in the long run, gold is a drag as an investment. If you don't believe me, go visit a website called goldpricehistory.com and go in and look at a 30, 40, 50 year price of gold. Had a spike in 1981 and the one that just happened. That's it in 68 years. If you didn't own it during those two little windows of time, you never made any money on gold. Highly speculative. The chartist in me calls it spiky. Bond investments are like soft ocean waves when you look at them on a chart, okay? Stock charts tend to look more like the Himalaya Mountains, sharp, pointy peaks, right? You know, so all of these investments have these visual things that I use much more than I do commentary. I use charts and long-term behavior patterns much more than I do anything that I read. Most of what I'm going to read about the investment is just another person's opinion. I have 40 years experience, so I want to hear a lot of other opinions, and that's important. But you're going to find that most of us with the experience are going to come down into similar philosophies of what to do. Last week, I brought in a little article that I wrote in the Providence Journal. Was my first media endeavor in 1991, and I, you know, my usual simple style, I brought it in. It's a, you know, it's a big, big report, lots of words, and I glanced through it, and I shared with you all that I brought this in. I wrote it in 1991, and nothing's changed. The fundamentals of investing, what that journalist was asking me to express through that article, you would ask the same questions today and get almost the very same answers. The difference was, back then, you had to go to the library to find out about a mutual fund, and now you can just click your phone and learn all about it. And that's a good thing. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Portfolio, back to this. 9 ETFs, and this is just about generalizations, these comments. You could have 10 or 11 or 7, you know. But I think you got to get close to 10 to cover all the bases, or, you know, 8 to 10. I want to also mention that in this portfolio, the largest holding is the most conservative of them all. It's this Lord Abbett short duration bond fund at 15% of the money. And everything else is 10% or 5. Another good rule to not over commit to any one category. I'm comfortable up to 20% in a regional fund. Comfortable 20% in U.S., all of Europe, emerging markets, and an individual country, 5% other than U.S. Most of those individual countries in the world outside the U.S. are very difficult investments, and usually better off owning all of them. The U.S. is still, I think, in the long run, the best market to own. But the next couple of years, I think you're going to see, as rates rise here, that your foreign investments are going to have their time to shine a bit. Make sure you have them in the account. Make sure you didn't remove them lately. It's very tricky. You know, I try to express the danger to you through my experience, and I realize it's very, very difficult, and I surely am not capable of making every call correctly about what we do. Managing money doesn't mean you speculate. Many of the holdings are held for a good length of time. It's a conservative style of things, although you can have an aggressive managed portfolio if that's what you've agreed to, you know, with whoever you're working with. But ETFs, I think, for most of you, are the way to go if you want to do it yourself, especially because it's very, very low cost. But if you're jittery, if you are fooling yourself that there's long-term money when it's not, you know, if you put, I run to people sometimes and say, well, what'd you put that investment in that particular fund for? Well, I wanted it for long term. Okay. What happens if your car breaks? Where's the money to cover that? Oh, I don't have any other money. Well, then that's not right. Because something's going to happen to that car. As Dave Ramsey says, Murphy's going to move in. First chance he gets with his drunk cousin, right? And wreck your life, cause all kinds of problems. And you're not going to have any cash. You're going to have to sell the investment when it's low. In 08 and 09, I did a little experiment trying to, again, grow my own understanding of all this complex stuff. when the stock market was on its knees bleeding and no one was looking up in the supermarket. Do you remember going to the supermarket? No one looked up. They were looking at the floor, walking around. It was such a frightening time. Our stock market was down over 50%. Very, very frightening time for everyone, including me. But at a time like that, that would be the time to buy and to invest. And that's the hardest lesson to learn in investing. Some of the greatest authors of all time said, when do you buy? When there's blood in the streets. One of the reasons to have good savings is not just for emergencies, it's for opportunity. What if the good old stock, U.S. stock market is 30% off next week? I say buy it. I say long-term, that's a great value. If you get a third off, the best stock market in the world long-term, and is usually, in my opinion, in a good portfolio, the largest the largest holding versus international, you know. Although right now, myself and my view of things is that I think you can have as much overseas as in the U.S. That's not typically the case. Long-term training taught us 75-25. But 30 years ago, when I was taught that, 75% of the stocks in the world that you could buy were American companies. And I remember hearing that. I was only like 20 years old and thinking, oh, I kind of felt proud, you know, good old U.S. of A. 38 years later into my career, it's exactly the opposite. 75% of the stocks available in the world are not U.S. companies. That's a big change. You went from a quarter to complete quarterly flip. So, I mean, that's a big move. So should you have more in international? I think you should, especially if you have a larger account and you're older. I do think if you own them for, next to each other for the long term, the international might actually bring your return down in total return, but it's going to have different cycles, so it'll help to smooth out the journey a little bit. You want to have two things in your portfolio, things that don't go down at all or don't go down hardly at all. And then of the things that do go down, you want things that don't go down together. You know, technology and utility stocks don't move. They're not buddies. They don't even know who they don't know who they're completely different animals. So those type of extremes in a sector like technology and that and even biotech would be another good example. They don't have any similar behavior patterns. So therefore, you don't want to have even in your stock portion of your account the similar type of stocks that they're all going to fall or react the same way to a disaster. And that's why you want to have some defensive things in there if you're not really young, you know, like utilities. I like real estate is a defensive move, real estate that pays income. Some of the ones you can look at today for that are global. That's really interesting. Imagine a global real estate fund. So you can put $2,000 into this nice fund, ETF, maybe at like, might only cost you $10 to buy it today online, commission, small. And you have you own real estate all around the world with professional management with $2,000. And you get a dividend of 3% while you're waiting. I mean, that's amazing to me, but I'm a nerd. That's how it works, you know. So this stuff has always been amazing to me. The tools are there, folks. Don't be afraid of them. Most of the time I find people who haven't done anything, it's because they didn't know what to do. They weren't going to do it themselves. And maybe just hadn't found anyone they could talk to that's that made them feel comfortable enough to drop their guard, I guess, a little bit to do that, you know. One of the beauties of a program like this is that, and we're not asking for anyone to call the office. We never do that, you notice. We ask you to call the show because that's good for our listeners. We don't ask anyone to call the office, although that happens a lot, you know. This is part of a natural transition of what we do and who we are, but we've always chosen not to connect the two, and we have never in 25 years ever designed any part of our program to promote our financial company that we obviously run in Lincoln, Rhode Island, right? So a financial group. We all know that by now. We've been around for 30 years, so. But you've noticed that we keep it pretty quiet. Actually have clients occasionally in the office listen to the show and come in and look at me and smile and say, you know, you weren't that easy to find. I thought for sure I'd be able to get your number off your radio show, you know, for the firm. And I said, no, we decided a long time ago, that's a fearless leader, Don, more great decisions he made, that no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to let this show become an infomercial, and we're not going to let it become something where we're designing the information to try to achieve a personal goal. The selfish thing we hope to achieve here is to establish ourselves as serious players in the financial world with heavy experience and a desire and a caring to do the right thing. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business. I'm Steve Beauvais, and I'll be back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Hey, here's a little ditty on floating rate investments. Year-to-date return, I'm looking at a particular one, no reason to even mention the name. They're all very similar. 1 year return, 8%. And so far this year, up 2.35. So 4 to 5 is the goal. But the word floating is in there. See, floating rate? You don't hear any of the bond have that word floating in there. And that's because they're very short duration bonds, which means they mature quickly. And therefore, they catch the rising interest rate curve. So the dividend on this fund will go up without the share price going in the other direction. This many of you over the past couple of years have shared with us articles you've read, things you've seen, and it's very important to notice the danger of bonds when rates are rising, and that's only especially the 30-year and longer bond. And even 20-year corporates. So most advisors in the corporate area are recommending, 3 to 7 year maturities right now. I like really short-term stuff. The bond department should be a very predictable department in my portfolio, so I tend to lean towards the more predictable, safer stuff in the bond department, because you can make up for that lack of risk in the stock area, and that's really what they're designed to do, right? To take risk. Stocks are bonds on. So if Nathan were here tonight, he'd say, I thought stocks were confusing until I figured out bonds. Yeah, you got dividends to deal with. And guess what? Some of them are taxed in different ways, depending on what they are. Tax-free bonds are tax-free. High-yield bonds are taxed as ordinary income. And different tax rates. Is it an IRA or not? What if it's a Roth? Oh, then the whole thing's tax-free. I mean, it's like an onion, layer after layer after layer. Speaking of which, this week had, I think, 3 or 4 conversations with clients that were in the home stretch of their saving for retirement. And they were in good position, had their debts paid off. And every time I came up with the same answer: maximize your Roth IRAs if you qualify. A couple can put $13,000 a year away. If you did that for just 5 years, that's $80,000. And that's all those investment gains will be tax-free for you as long as you keep the account for a minimum of 5 years and take the money out when you're over 59 and a half. And so Roth IRA, and you can have one spouse with the $13,000 of income, and the other spouse doesn't have to have any income and can still contribute the full IRA contribution. That's a new rule that happened about 14 years ago. But I remember in the beginning, and I met with a gentleman recently who was very knowledgeable of things long ago, and he told me it's $250 maximum for the spouse IRA. And I said, that's correct. That's what it was for many, many years, but it changed quite a while ago. And so if you have earned income to cover your own IRA, you can't put money in an IRA unless you have earned income. Pension doesn't count. People are very surprised to learn this. So if you're living off rental incomes and dividend income, you can't put money in an IRA. The IRS won't let you do it. You can only take a tax deduction on your IRA. You can do Roth, but a regular IRA you can't do unless you have earned income, at least to the amount you contributed. Because they're saying, where's the money coming from? You're contributing if you're not making any money, right? Makes sense? So it's all a matter of taxes and how that works. A Roth IRA is just a great thing. The younger you are, the better it is. I got some of it myself. What do you do for retirement? Do you save all pre-tax? What about Roth? What about after-tax completely? There's a whole set of IRS tax laws, things like domestic dividend exclusion, that you can get a special reduced income tax for taking a risk by investing in another American company. It's designed to encourage us to do that. Tax-free bonds at 3%. Tax-free? Federal and state? 2.8, 3.1. Wow, that sounds nice at my age, right? Doesn't sound not intriguing at all if you're 30. That's not what you need. It's the wrong tool for the job, right? My dad, as I've shared with you before, is a retired mechanic, and a great one. And in his own words, he told me years ago, he said, yeah, you can hammer the nail in with the back of the screwdriver handle, but a hammer works better. And what he meant was be professional about your trade, whatever it might be. Use the right tools. Know how to use the right tools. Don't be a hack, is what he said. He said, yeah, you can hammer that nail in with the back of that screwdriver handle, but hammer's the right tool, Stephen. And what he meant was he gave me an idea in a pinch, if I didn't have the hammer, how to get it done. But use the right tool first. I think in the financial biz, that's the same thing. We're not going to talk about it tonight. It's heavy-duty stuff. Maybe next week. A lot of changes going on in the fiduciary area. Federal laws coming into play. There are some issues with them, and it's not perfect. I understand that. But I do think laws that require all financial advisors to act in the best interest of the customer, I'm all for that. been all for that for 15 years. That's the way we operate in our office only. And we do think the problem is that in human beings in general, if you have 10,000 financial advisors and the old-fashioned commission scene was allowed to continue, there's always a percentage of them that are going to just recommend what's best for them, not for you. They're usually the ones that are there for a job and are thinking about a career, like I was at 19, 20, 21 years old. If it's just a temporary job to them, I can almost understand them thinking that way, which is why I and this is tough because I was young once too, you know, and I didn't have the tenure. But if you're going to actually hire someone to manage an account for you, make sure they've been doing it for 10 years minimum. I think that's a very good rule. You know, this isn't sneakers we're talking about here. We're talking about your money, your lifetime savings. So be diligent, be careful. Don't be afraid or shy to ask hard questions of the people you deal with. How much do you get paid for doing this for me, and what are you going to do for me? Are there any other costs I should know about? You know, you really need to be comfortable asking those questions. The fruit of those questions, although the answers are the fruit, the reaction that you get from someone when you dare ask them, how much do you get paid for doing this for me? That's perfectly, not only is it an appropriate question, everyone should ask it. Because if you don't know, then you don't know how to evaluate whether or not you as a consumer are getting a good value for your money. You keep doing this with these people? Is there someone that can do it better for a better price? You know, you need to understand what it costs. And so this is part of the new fiduciary rules will be involving more and more disclosure and an understanding. My own brokerage company has wordings now that says talks about reasonable compensation. Can't do something with somebody and making 2 months' income in 10 seconds. It's not healthy. It's not good. That's why it's being changed. There's some argument against it, too. I'm old school. I did some work in the commission field for a long time, and you can be a very, very reliable, and there are many of them, honest, good commission financial people out there that want to keep doing it the way they've always done it, you know, and I understand that, but I happen, in my opinion only, and the opinion of my team here, is that it's time. It's time to get that rule in there, too. And I think the more that we move as a profession together towards protecting the consumer, that's always where we are going to find our greatest level of credibility, our greatest level of respect. It's not in what your paycheck it was Tuesday, young advisors. It's in how you're viewed by the public. So don't have success or wealth be your goal. Have your goal be to be of value to the people you serve. And if you are of value, the money will follow sooner or later. It's a matter of time. No matter what field that you work in, usually that will help. I know I say this a lot, but I just love Dave Ramsey. What a great foundation for young people. The young people in the studio here, should make sure you listen to Dave Ramsey. Teach you how to stay out of debt and then live your life within your means. And then someday you can be a successful investor, like the type of things that we talk about more so here on this program. Hey, thank you for joining us all week and again for a couple of decades. Have a good weekend. Weather's going to be questionable. Happy Father's Day to you all and to my dad in Bristol and all dads out there. And, of course, Monday night, Don Sower right here on AM 790, a station for talk and business. I see him lurking in bookstores.